army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Good morning and welcome to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, and this is one of those shows that I can't wait to dive into. Why? Well, simply because it's all about the bread with me. And I love bread. I mean, if you ask any of my friends, they'll all say something Sharon can never live without, and that is her bread. And you all know my favorite meal is a biltong bagel. So last week I had a little bit of a health hiccup, but everything, thank God, is good. And it was suggested that I cut down on my bread intake. I was devastated. How on earth could I survive? I mean, Shabbos, I make challah every week. I mean, this is the highlight of my week, is my challah. And I thought, I just actually can't live without my bread. And so I decided, in honor of the most important, delectable dough ingredient, which is yeast, I asked Jeanette Rosewall, the business manager of Anki Yeast, to join us this morning to discuss my most favorite addition to any meal, which is bread. Let me tell you a little bit about Jeanette. Let's basically say she is a cereal scientist, not an S-E-R-I-A-L, a C-E-R-E-A-L, a cereal scientist. And basically she's in charge of 8,000 loaves of bread going out today. And I welcome you, Jeanette, to the Cooking Corner. And thank you so much for joining us at such short notice. Can see I was craving bread. That's all I was thinking about last week. How on earth would I survive? Hence my phone call to Anki Yeast. So let's start at the very beginning. See, I can't even sing Do Re Mi. That's why I have to talk on air. So let's start with, what is yeast? I mean, how do we get that magnificent, chewy, pull-apart bread that we always, that we love?
First of all, Sharon, thank you so much for the opportunity to join you this morning. It's a great privilege for me to also be here. So what is yeast?
Yeah.
Yeast is a natural leavening agent that produces gas or carbon dioxide, to be more specific, ethanol, and other flavor components. And that is the flavor components that you refer to. Why are you so crazy about bread?
And it's addictive.
It surely is, yes. And it's all through the process of fermentation. So for some, this fermentation terminology might sound a very complex term. But let me just explain it. Fermentation comes from the Latin word, from the Latin word leaven. Mm-hmm. And what it means is that a complex substance is broken down into simpler components. This is the process that is followed for beer making, yogurt, bread, wine. It's all through the process of fermentation. So let's go back to specifically yeast. So yeast gives rise to this unique aroma of freshly baked products.
Nothing like it.
Yeah. But it also requires a specific temperature, ingredients, and time to be able to do that. So at Anki Yeast, we have different yeast strains. So there's a yeast strain specifically for baking. There's a yeast strain specifically for brewing beer. There's a yeast strain specifically for winemaking. So these are the different types of yeast. Uh-huh. So if we talk about baker's yeast, we say that the baker's yeast comes in two formats. The one format is the Anki Instant yeast, which yes. I think most of the listeners will be familiar with.
Yes, the purple packet.
The purple packet. Yeah. And then there's also what we call the fresh yeast, which is mainly being used by the commercial bakeries. So the Anki purple pack, as you've referred to, comes in a portion pack 10 gram, which is convenient to use, and it also disperses easily throughout the flour. But there's also the 7 gram pack size for the bread machines that supply. And all of this is available at supermarkets.
I was wondering why there's a 7 gram and 10 gram. I mean, it's such a small difference. Now you tell me. Thank you.
Yes, it's for the bread machines. Because the bread machines just require slightly less. So they've done a lot of baking trials and determined that 7 gram is the optimal portion size for the bread machines. And that is what you can find then.
Right.
So I hope that answers the question about all the different types of yeast.
Certainly does. Now, you know, as I said, a lot of us cook and bake our own bread on a Friday, and a lot of us have become more health conscious, and we're using nutty wheat flour with yeast, of course, and what actually activates that yeast? What gives us that beautiful sort of puffed up feeling with the yeast? What is it that works so well with it?
Okay. So yeast is a microorganism, and any microorganism needs optimal conditions to grow or to ferment. So what are the optimal conditions then for the baker's yeast? So first of all, we need to hydrate the ingredients. That's why you have to add the water. Right. But we don't add cold water, we add lukewarm water to be able to give the yeast the ideal temperature to work at. And also, we listeners would know from experience that to try and say to the yeast, hurry up, is not ideal. Yeah. The yeast also needs time. And yes, one needs to find that balance between the time that you require, the fermentation process or the proving is another terminology used for the same thing.
Yes.
So it's a balance between the time, but also the amount of yeast. Obviously, the more yeast you will add, the shorter the fermentation time. Ah. But with the anchor yeast portion pack size, for a 500 gram or a 1 kilogram flour pack, that is already at its optimal dosage. But
You're saying about what, 4 cups to a 10 gram packet is good?
Yeah. Okay. That is more or less what they work on. So it is really to give the yeast the optimal conditions of time, ingredients, and temperature to do its fermentation work that it's supposed to.
A friend of mine actually used in winter, she drives around, goes to school, makes the dough, goes to school early, puts it in the bag in the car with her, drives around with the heater on. By the time she gets home, she says she always has perfectly risen dough using the instant dough.
Absolutely, and I can understand why it's working for her. She produced a little prover inside her car for this yeast to be able to work.
Okay, and while we're on the subject of yeast, I just have to ask you a quick one. What is nutritional yeast? I mean, how does that differ from this yeast we're talking about? Yeah.
So nutritional yeast is deactivated yeast. Again, big terminology that people might not be familiar with, but it means that the yeast does not produce any gas or CO2. So deactivated yeast is yeast that are sold as a food supplement.
Right.
So it is rich in vitamin B3, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, as well as zinc. And it's suitable for any person and also for vegan people.
Because it's not actually used for dough. It's used as a supplement. I know that I use it quite often in dishes that have to have no dairy in them. And it gives it like a cheesy kind of taste in my white sauces.
Yes.
You put a little bit of this, that yeast in, that nutritional yeast.
It is, yeah. So apart from the nutritional aspect, it can also contribute to a little bit of flavor.
Right.
So if one adds a little bit of salt together with that,
yes.
It will bring out the savory flavor, yes.
Really? In anything, really?
In anything.
Fantastic. Yeah. So would it be like Marmite?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So now, the other day I was actually, a friend came over and she wanted to know how to make, challah. So, I normally start to do it on a Thursday night and I put it in my fridge. I know others will say, I have other opinions on that. And she said to me, you mean you're just throwing it all in with the rapid rising yeast and it's going to do its thing? She said, what about starter? You're not, so tell us what a starter is.
So again, starter culture or starters is a terminology that are used for a certain process. So there's slight differences, but the terminology, typical terminology that is used is starter culture, a pre-ferment, a poolish, or even a beaker. So there are slight differences in terms of perhaps ingredients or times, but they all refer to the same type of process. So right. It means that you will pre-ferment or a fermentation of a portion of the flour before the time for a certain period. Like you said, you do it on a Thursday evening already.
Yes.
And then you add that to your final dough. And what I can say to you, there's not a right or a wrong. There are just different practices. And it's all about the flavor. Because with a pre-ferment or a starter culture, you develop more flavors in the bread. And that is the whole purpose of it. In South Africa, if I can mention, our typical sandwich bread is what we call a straight dough system. If you go to America, the majority of their bread is a sponge and dough process. Now, that sponge actually refers to a pre-fermentation, the development of more flavors. So, you know, people that visit overseas or even in Europe, they will come back and say, our bread is so bland. Why is that? It's because, in general, we follow a straight dough system, while in Europe, especially like in France and Germany, they often use a pre-ferment. And it's all about that flavor component.
Okay, so what would we do? We would make up our dough and then would we take like about a cup or a handful off and put it into a jar? I saw on TV the other day that they've got names for it.
Yes.
They have, what was, I can't remember the name, I think Daisy, and this one had a name for it, and it had been going for 8 years.
Absolutely. There's people that have their pre-ferments or their biggers or poolish that they save or renew for many, many years. I can also just mention that it's not always just yeast. Some bakers, and we now go more into artisanal bakers, will have a combination of yeast and lactic acid bacteria. So it's bacteria that are producing other flavor components. Think about a typical rye bread from Germany. It gives you a very sour taste. And that comes from a lactic acid bacteria. In the pre-ferment.
So that means it's got milk in it.
No, not
lactic acid is not milk.
No.
Okay.
It is just a acid that chemical component that is produced by the bacteria, but it does not refer to milk. No, not
right.
at all.
We'll come back after the break, chatting to Jeanette Roseville, and see you soon.
Army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, and you're tuned into the Cooking Corner. And we are talking to Jeanette Rosewell, who is the business manager for Anki Yeast, cereal scientist, you name it. She looks after 8,000 loaves of bread a day. And she's giving us tips for, with Purim coming up, for our bread, our doughs, for our challahs every Friday night. And we were just talking about general yeast and the different types and starter yeasts. And just to go back to the starter again, just one question I want to ask you. Let's say I'm using about 8 cups of flour. How much of that starter yeast would I have to pull off from the original, from my starter little jar of dough?
Yeah, in terms of housewife recipe, I would think if you could calculate around about 10%.
Ah, okay.
So 10% of your starter culture.
Yes.
But if you like bread with a stronger flavor, increase that to 15%.
Play around with it.
And play around with it.
See what your family
prefers. I think often people think there's just a right and a wrong in terms of quantities.
Yeah.
But, I come to this point a little bit later, maybe in the interview.
Okay.
I always say baking is an art and a science. There's often this debate, but in my view, it's a combination of both.
Sure.
So let the artist in you come out and play around.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is that every Friday night is actually quite funny. I'm sure this happens in everybody's home. As you cut through the challah, everybody either goes, or, if it hasn't risen too well, or if it's a bit doughy, you've got to be careful. But just quickly back to the starter, because I find it so interesting. So then next week when I make my challah dough, I take a portion of that and put it into the jar with my starter dough. And we just keep sort of increasing and taking off.
Yes. Yeah. Fantastic. You have to feed you have to feed your starter.
Feed it, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And where do I keep it? In the fridge or?
Yes. Some people will keep it outside the fridge for a short while. If I say outside the fridge, at ambient, in other words, for a short while, 2 or 3 hours, and then put it back in the fridge. Other people will keep it in the fridge for, from the time that they've added it or feed the starter, they will just keep it in the fridge.
Well, I've already got my name for my little thing. I've never done it before, and I'm going to start this week. Okay, so now a sugar substitute. So many people have said to me, please come up with a recipe that I don't have to use sugar in. My husband's diabetic and this one's diabetic. Can we? Will it be the same?
Okay, so we need to understand that yeast are using the fermentable sugars. And the fermentable sugars, the main source of that is the flour. So certainly the sugar that you add to the recipe will also help. The yeast will use some of it, but it also plays a role in the browning of your bread. So if you replace the added sugar with a sweetener, the bread will simply taste nice and sweet.
Yes.
But the yeast will still use the fermentable sugars, which is from the flour. So diabetics always need to take caution for that.
Okay. Your experience. What do you find? What is the difference between the instant dry yeast, the one that I just love using because it's so quick, or the little cubes? What is the difference? What's better for you, do you think?
So the little cubes refer to what we call fresh yeast.
Fresh yeast, thank you.
So and that's not to say that the dry yeast is old. So it's not fresh in terms of old and not old. The fresh is just a terminology that we use to distinguish between the different forms of the yeast. So you can obtain the same baking result with the Anker instant yeast and the fresh yeast. So commercial bakeries in general are using the fresh yeast, while for housewife baking or smaller bakes, yes, we recommend the Anchor Instant yeast.
The rapid rising one.
Yeah, it is. It's portioned. It's as good as I say. You can achieve the same baking result. Sadly, I have to mention that from a business point of view, we no longer do the very small cubes that you refer to, and it's after market research and also in terms of the economy, etc. Yes. They found that the Anchor Instant or rapid yeast, as you also refer to it, is the one that consumers will use the best.
I suppose it was just drying up as well. It was getting old quickly.
Yeah, and I think it's also, you know, to be able to make sure that the product that is on the shelf or product with the correct best before date, etc. So the instant yeast, the Anchor Instant yeast, has a shelf life of 2 years. With the fresh yeast, it will get the expired quicker to an expiry date, and then we also need to manage that carefully and make sure that old stock is not on the shelf.
Yes.
But overall, the instant dry yeast, Anchor Instant Dry Yeast, is very good, and you can achieve the same bake result than with fresh yeast.
Okay, because I actually went into our local supermarket and I said, where's the fresh yeast? And I haven't used it for so long. And they said, that's the problem. Nobody uses it anymore. Yeah. So they've stopped making it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But just for the overseas listeners, I hope there are a lot of you out there, that is just a little bit about fresh yeast for you. You were actually talking about expiry dates. I think there are expiry dates on all the packets, aren't there?
Yes. Every sachet have a best before date.
Yes.
Indicated on the back of the packet. It is printed there, so consumers can just look out for that date.
Okay. Now, because we bake this, we eat it on Friday night. What's left over, we eat for Saturday lunch, for our Shabbos lunch. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that can prolong the, that we can add to the recipe to keep that dough fresher, a little longer, keep it soft, other than putting it in a bag straight away, you know?
Yeah. What can we add? So the vitamin C that we add to the Anchor Instant yeast will certainly assist with getting a good volume and soft bread. But if consumers would want to have the bread last a little bit longer in terms of softness, I would recommend to maybe just increase the fat component of the recipe slightly. That will certainly help you to keep it softer for a little bit longer.
Great. That's good to know. Okay. So tips now for getting our dough to rise. Because, of course, it's not the yeast. The yeast is perfect. It's just us. Okay, so tips for getting that dough to rise to perfection.
Okay, so I'm going to just try and give a few pointers.
Yes.
So let's start off to say that we have to keep in mind that we have to keep the conditions optimal for the yeast. So it must be the right ingredients, the right time, and the right temperature. So the optimal temperature for yeast, baker's yeast, to ferment is 30 to 40 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
Just as a rule of thumb.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you follow
your... A hot day in Africa.
Yeah, I think currently it's ambient for us in Johannesburg and Pretoria. Hey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you follow your baking process of mixing all your ingredients together, add the lukewarm water and then kneading the dough until it's soft and elastic, and then let it rise into double its size.
Right.
Then knock it down and then allow it again after you've done the shaping to let it then again rise until double the size. You should end up with a perfect bake. I can perhaps just mention that on an extremely hot day, rather use lukewarm cold water.
Ah.
On a winter's day, use lukewarm water. Because in that way you keep the yeast conditions ideal. You can imagine if your ambient temperatures are very hot, you will get too quickly fermentation process. Yes. So you want to say to the yeast, listen, just slow down a little bit. I need time so that I can just catch all these flavor components that are going to be produced.
Yes.
So in that way, one regulates the conditions for the yeast.
Okay. So now, and letting it rise in the fridge overnight.
Okay. So there's a term actually for that commercially. People refer to it as a retarded dough. So again, the ideal conditions for yeast would be to prove it between 30 and 40 degrees Celsius. However, there are bakers that due to circumstances need to supply a product at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
And instead of getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning, they will prepare the dough in the previous day, late afternoon. They will keep it in the fridge. And then in the mornings, they will take it out, prove it for 30 or 40 minutes at a higher temperature, and then bake it off. So that is a possibility. Right. So it all depends on how much time you have. The ideal, of course, is to have it at warmer temperatures. The baking process or the fermentation process will then happen quicker.
Yeah.
Again, there's not a right and a wrong here. It's all about what is your circumstances.
Right.
And if you have dough in the fridge, you have to keep in mind that you might have to use a slightly higher yeast level because the yeast is now stressed out about the cold temperatures and you need to help the yeast. So you give more yeast to the dough system to be able to get the ideal volume still at the end of your of your bake.
You know, mine's, normally it rises beautifully, and I take it out and I just bring it to room temperature and knead it again, and then plait and whatever. And so, but as you say, it's always good. It's better to do it on the day, but sometimes, as you say, circumstances don't allow it. So, it wasn't so long ago that we had challah at somebody's house, and it tasted of beer. What was what went wrong there? I didn't want to question too much. I just ate a little bit.
So the first question I would ask is: are they sure that they used baker's yeast and not brewer's yeast? Because remember, at at the beginning, I said there are different yeast strains. So, and we also sell brewer's yeast, which is the instant yeast.
Yes.
So it could be that it's a different yeast strain. So if we think about brewing beer or fermentation for brewing beer, we also use a different substrate. So the substrate for, or substrate, another word for that would be the ingredients.
Right.
So the main ingredient for baker's yeast is wheat flour. For brewer's yeast, it would be barley and hops. So the substrate or ingredient is totally different. But why the bread would taste different or taste like beer would most probably be that it was a brewer's yeast. It could be.
Or they could they not have overproofed it?
Overproof, yes. I think then one will get that over-fermented flavor.
Maybe it was more fermented.
Flavor. So that is a possibility.
Because I've never tasted beer.
You've never tasted beer, So over-fermentation will give us that strong flavor. Think about any fruit that is overripe.
It
comes from the wild yeast that's present, but it also gives you that over-fermented flavor, yes, which is not always pleasant.
Yeah, right. So now, some common faults. in baking bread?
Yes, I think there are quite a number, but let me try and point three or four and maybe a little bit more, and see if we can find out what the possible cause and solution to that is. So let's start with the dough did not rise or rose too slowly.
Yes.
So it would be that it could be insufficient yeast. Because our pack size is portion, I would then just go to the recipe and see if I didn't use maybe too much flour for that portion size of the yeast. So
yes,
one just need to check that. Or that the yeast perhaps have expired. So uh-huh, just look on the best before date. But as I say, in general, our yeast has a 2-year shelf life. But we don't know what, people
yes
do with the yeast. Keep it in, you think you use the freshest packet in your cupboard, but maybe it was an old packet. So just check your best before date.
Okay.
Then the dough is too sticky. So that could be that you've added too much water.
Yes.
Or too little flour. Most of the time, the sticky dough is not related to yeast, but more to the flour and the ability of the flour to absorb the water.
Uh-huh.
Then bread rose, but it collapsed in the oven. So there's always this thing amongst bakers. They either blame the yeast or the flour. So in this case, I will have to say when it collapsed, one needs to look at the flour. If you have another packet of flour in your cupboard, maybe try that. Often if flour is just too weak, it can result in collapsing or over fermentation. Over fermentation will also cause the dough to collapse.
Okay. Nothing wrong with keeping flour in a freezer?
Nothing wrong with keeping it.
Great.
In fact, the physical components of the flour does not change during freezing temperatures. You just save your flour from being infested by insects.
Yeah, which is something very important to us.
Yeah, no, yeah, nothing wrong with that at all.
Great.
So to get back to some bread faults, let's look at the bread rose, but it collapsed in the oven. We've covered now. The crust too thick.
Yes.
That could be that the oven temperature is maybe a little bit too low.
Uh-huh.
So just check your oven temperature for that. Bread is solid and compact. Again, we refer that back to the collapsing. When the dough collapses, it also gives you that dense structure. So just look at your dough and the stability of the dough. Or the flour that is maybe too weak. If you have another packet of flour, maybe try that. The mm-hmm unfortunate thing with baking is you only see that right at the
yes
end. And all your hard work
yes
is...
you open the oven.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You know what I like to do sometimes, actually, is just to put my challahs, I plait them, whatever, and I put them into loaf tins. Well, I know they're going to rise.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll come back to a few more little faults after the break.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, and I am chatting all things bread with our wonderful guest, Jeanette Rosewell, who is telling us everything we need to know. Can't blame the yeast anymore. Can't blame the flour. We've got to blame ourselves. So let's go back to, are there any other faults, common faults that we make when making bread?
Yeah.
Or was that the last one?
I think another one that I can think of is that the bread is too large or poorly shaped. I think one then just need to look at your proving time or your rising period that is maybe too long. or you've just added too much yeast. So again, check your ingredients, that your ratios are correct.
Would you say on average the ratio would be 4 cups to 10 grams?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Great. And, I was actually sitting the other day at a friend's and we had some lovely bread and whatever, and she says, her other friend says, "Did you do that trick?" So she says, "Yes, I did." I said, "Well, tell me, well, what trick are you talking about? I don't have this little secret conversation without talking to me about food." And, she said, "No, we add a teaspoon of baking powder to our challah, let's say, for no matter how much, we just add a teaspoon." And I thought, "Oh, okay. What do you think of that? Is it necessary?"
So, yeast is used in a fermentation process, as I've mentioned right at the beginning, that gives us unique flavor components. Yes. So, you know that consumers and we refer to as that freshly baked flavor, that smell, that taste. Yes. I can assure you, you're not going to get that with baking powder. Yeast is a natural leavening agent.
Right.
So the yeast produces a lot of flavor components, which is unique to bread. But baking powder can be used. As you know, baking powder is most often used with confectionery products.
Yes.
But there are products where they use it in combination with yeast.
Yes.
For instance, donuts. Again, I won't say there's anything wrong with it, but you have to keep in mind that you might sacrifice some of these wonderful flavor components that are so unique with a yeast-raised dough system. We also always say that with wheat flour, the wheat flour has a gas-holding capacity. It can hold the carbon dioxide that is produced by the yeast. And that contributes, when it's baked, it contributes to that flavors that we experience when we open the oven. I mean, somebody can stop in the road, and when they enter your house, they will say to you, "Oh, you've baked wheat."
Yeah.
It is so unique.
There is. That's the only thing that they can't bottle is that beautiful smell.
And I think
baking.
A lot of people have tried to put that smell in an added flavorant, but it's never been the same.
So now, let's talk about, gluten-free products. Okay. Gluten-free bread. Do Anchor do anything to help with a gluten-free product?
Yes, part of Anchor Yeast is that we do product development for customers.
Yes.
And we will assist any customer that approach us with regards to gluten-free products.
Yes. Because your yeast is actually gluten-free.
The yeast is gluten-free.
Yeah.
So I think the challenge that anyone that bakes a gluten-free product will tell you is, I cannot trap the gas.
Yes.
So the gas holding capacity that is so unique of wheat flour, cake flour, white bread flour that we know, that is very difficult to mimic in another dough system.
Right.
So typical with gluten free, they will use potato starch and a lot of other type of ingredients. I think people can just go to a gluten-free product on the shelf and they will actually see the length of that ingredient list.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that you need to add to be able to make a product with an acceptable volume, shape, volume, but also from a taste point of view.
Oh, I know. It's so difficult.
So it is difficult.
And you've got to bake it in a container because it you can't plait it. You can't roll it. You can't. No, it's just a loose, wet dough.
Yeah. It's more like a batter, you know, like when you bake a cake.
Yes.
That batter that You need to give a shape to the butter.
Right.
So therefore, you know, you need to bake it in a pan. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about artisanal breads. What are you coming up with in the, lately, and how do we get those beautiful artisanal tastes?
Yeah,
I get so excited with bread.
So artisanal bread, again, is a terminology that different people understand different things around artisanal bread.
Yeah.
Within Anchor Yeast, when we talk or refer to artisanal bread, we mainly refer to bread that is not mass-produced.
Right.
I think that would be a fair definition for it.
Right.
In general, I've already mentioned about, is bread an art or a science?
Yes.
There's that debate. I always say when we talk about mass-produced bread, I most probably talk more about the science. But when we talk about artisanal bread, we talk about the art.
Right.
So artisanal breads in general also include an extended fermentation period.
Uh-huh.
Okay, or okay. Rising period. Different right. Terminology for exactly the same thing. So instead of just an hour hour or 2 hours fermentation, it will be an extended fermentation.
Yes.
And most artisanal breads would also include what we referred to earlier on, the starter culture, the pre-ferment, the bigger, and that all give rise to the different flavors. So an artisanal loaf of bread won't necessarily look exactly the same than the other one.
Right.
You know, they will look slightly different.
Yes, and they always have like this beautiful, crispy, crunchy, sort of floured crust.
Yes, yes.
And how do they do that?
Yeah, the crust comes from the use of steam in the oven.
Ah, to get going to ask you, if you put a little thing of water in the oven, okay, that's what does it.
Yes.
Okay.
Or if you want to try it at home,
yes,
take a clean spray bottle. You know, a spray bottle that you can put water in. You know, I've got one for my cat when she goes up the curtain. You know, I spray her with a little bit of water. Take a spray bottle with water, and when you put your bread in the oven, at quite a high temperature, I would say, then just open your oven door and spray twice or three times, you know, close your oven door, wait for a few minutes and do that again. And you should be able to get a nice crispy crust on your
lovely.
Bread.
That's a great tip. Okay. So we've had such a lovely morning discussing bread and things that could go wrong and things that might go wrong and how to improve on things. And it's been wonderful to have you here, Jeanette. Thank you. If there are any questions, you can SMS Chai FM or you can call us, and we'll take your calls. And there's one other thing. When I was looking on your site, Jeanette, you have a thing called ilovetobake.co. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, it's a website that customers or consumers can go to.
Yes.
And the spelling of I love to bake is I love to.
Number two. I love is all lowercase.
Yes, to bake. bake.co.za. There's a number of recipes there that you can try out. And in fact, there's a lovely recipe for babka.
Yes.
With Purim that's coming up.
Yes.
Which, you can try out.
Try Hormantashen.
Yeah.
Mm.
And let us know how it goes.
Oh, we will. And I urge everybody, please let me know at Sharon, spelled Sharon, at chai.co.za. We're dying to have your feedback on your beautiful Hommentaschen, anything that went wrong, where we can help you, we'll be only too happy to help you. Coming up after the break, some lovely recipes, thanks to Anchor Yeast.
An army marches on its stomach, and so does a community. Join Sharon Lurie Tuesdays at 11 a.m. for the Chai FM Cooking Corner. Come hungry.
Welcome back to the Cooking Corner. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, as promised. I went on to the I Love to Bake site, and I remember telling you it's all lowercase, I love, and then two is the number two, to bake.co.za, and they've got all sorts of wonderful recipes for bread, for challahs, for everything delicious. So I chose this particular recipe. It's their chocolate babka recipe, and we can use it for Hommentaschen. You can use it, and instead of putting in chocolate, you can put in all sorts of things. You can put in peanut butter and chocolate. You can put in raisins and cinnamon and apples. You know all the beautiful sweet fillings that you love. Cinnamon, whatever you want. Okay. And this is how it goes. You will need to preheat your oven to 180 or 350. And you need 4 cups of cake flour, 1 teaspoon salt, 4 tablespoons of sugar, 60 grams margarine or butter if you go in the milchic route, the 10-gram packet of Anchor instant yeast. Remember that there are two kinds of packets. There's the thin one, and then there's the little square one. You need the 10 grams, which is the square one. The 7 grams, as we were told, is for bread machines. You'll also need about 1.5 cups of lukewarm water, but you'll see as you're going, as I've always said, depends on the flour. If the flour absorbs, you know, it's very dry, then it will absorb more water. If you keep it in the freezer, then it doesn't absorb as much water. But you'll see how you go. And then you'll also need 1 large egg beaten, and you'll need about 120 grams of baking chocolate. I think the chocolate tree is 150, so don't worry, you can put in extra chocolate. And you melt that chocolate over boiling water or in the microwave. Then you'll also need 30 mils, that's 2 tablespoons of cocoa powder, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, and 4 tablespoons of honey. And then you'll also need a little bit of sugar water to glaze it. So you'll need 1 cup of sugar and 1/2 cup of water together, and you boil that together in a saucepan over low heat for about 5 minutes, just sort of stirring it occasionally, and you know, and it mustn't go that caramel color like you're making sugar glass. It must just be a lovely glaze for the babka or for your Hommentaschen. And then what you do, the method is you mix all the dry ingredients and rub the margarine into the flour. You know how we make scones and things? So you rub the margarine into the flour, and then you add the Anchor yeast, the instant yeast, and you mix it together. Then you mix the water and egg together, beat that together, and add it to the flour mixture, and you just start kneading. It's wonderful for those arms, and wonderful for the heart, the body and the soul. You just get so involved with your dough, and you knead it until it's a smooth, beautiful, elastic. And there is nothing finer in this world than making your own dough. So then you place the dough on a lightly floured board. You don't want too much flour. And you cover it with a greased plastic. So in other words, you spray the plastic, one side of the plastic, with a little bit of spray and cook or olive oil, and cover the dough, because you don't want it to dry out, and you leave it to rest for about 10 minutes. In the meantime, you mix the melted chocolate, the cocoa, the cinnamon, and the honey all together. Then you knock down the dough and you roll it on a lightly floured surface into a rectangle about 35, 40 centimeters in length. Now, this is for babka, okay? If you're going to make Hommentaschen, then you need to cut it out into like a side plate size circle. Then you can put the filling in, and then you draw up the sides and press them together into the shape of a triangle. But because we're making babka, we're going to roll this out into a rectangle about 35 to 40 centimeters in length, and we're going to spread the chocolate mixture over the surface of the rectangle and roll it up into a roll, you know, like how we roll a Swiss roll. And we're going to pinch the ends together with our fingertips, and we're going to turn the seal towards the bottom. And then just using a sharp knife, you cut the roll down the middle in half, and then you turn the cut sides up. You seal the top ends together securely, and you take the halves and you twist them around each other. I wish you could see my hands, because I'm actually telling you how to do it with my hands. And then you seal the ends, and you securely seal the ends securely, and then you place the babka into a 1.5 liter baking pan. You cover with a greased plastic, and you allow it to rise in a warm place for about 25 to 30 minutes. And you brush it lightly with beaten egg. That's your egg wash. And so I normally take one egg, egg yolk, and 2 tablespoons of water, mix it all together, and then you paint it onto the babka, and you bake it in your preheated oven for about 25 to 30 minutes. As it comes out, you brush it with this beautiful sugar water glaze that I gave you the method for a little earlier. It's 1 cup of sugar to 1/2 cup of water. And you just paint this shiny gloss over it. Very important that as it comes out, you do it, because it sort of makes it beautiful and moist. And then you let it cool. And then you share it with everybody. So that's our babka recipe. If you want to, if you didn't manage to get it all down because I've had some complaints that I read too fast, you can get it on ilovetobake.co.za. And that's part of Anki Yeast's book, website page. Okay. Thank you. Don't laugh at me, Buzzy. Thank you for joining me. This has been a wonderful show, and I hope it's answered all the things that you need to know about bread, because, you know, we've got to get in quickly, because Pesach's around the corner, and then the bread goes to the side, and we start with all the Pesach recipes. So as long as we can have babka, bread, and all that's good, let's eat.